Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 29th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it. Let your friends, your family, your Romans, your countrymen, people that you're not so sure if you want to be their friend, people you're on the fence about, people that you're thinking about talking to, people that you want to meet and you don't know how to start the conversation. Let them know about this show. It'll be a great icebreaker. It'll make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made thus far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter @mundanefestival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lamberth, on Twitter @ChrisLamberth. This is episode 112 of the show. I have a very special guest, a man, a comedian by the name of Jim Search. He's one of the co-hosts of the Three of Negroes podcast, and I sat down with him, and you're going to hear that in a few minutes. I'm going to just say a couple things before that. I wanted to give a special shout out to Naomi Caravani for having me on her show, Bitches Brew, at Lucy's Lounge in Brooklyn. It's a really cool room. It almost felt like I was doing a Sam Shepard play because it looked like it's a back room of a bar, and it had curtains. And when you open the curtains, it looks like you're on the back porch of a Southern Gothic place. It could have been a Sam Shepard play or a Tennessee Williams play, one of the two. And it had a little piano back there, and it was a musician. A guy by the name of Sam, he goes by Sam Z, and he played in between the comedians, and he had a set before and a little intermission set. And it was a really fun show. I had a good time. And I want to give also a very, 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 very special shout out to Paul Verzi and his family for having me on the Kevin Longto Memorial Scholarship fundraiser at Levity Live, the much hyped show that I hyped on this show, and he hyped on his, and Bill Burr's Monday Morning Podcast. It was a really great night. It was myself, Paul Verzi, Bill Burr, the guests, the special guests were Pete Davidson from SNL and MTV, Ben Bailey from Cash Cab, and Greg Stone hosted the show, and it was just a great show from top to bottom. Levity Live was packed. They raised a lot of money, and Verzi's family was really, his mother-in-law was really pleased, and his wife, and it was a great night, and we hung out a little bit afterward. It was just a good show. It was really fun. I was kind of amped up for that show. It was a big show for me to be in a lineup like that, and I just worked on the set. Was glad that I got to work on it at Naomi's show, like one more show before I had that one. And Levity, when you do a show there, you usually get to pick your music. And I went up to Kendrick Lamar's "All Right" from "To Pimp a Butterfly," and that set the tone. And I felt good. I felt really good. And the crowd, I mean, I fucking killed. I had fun on the show, and I held up my end of the bargain, if you will, and I had a good time. I'll give you a movie recommendation. I will say go see It Follows. It Follows is I'm not really going to say much about it. I'm just going to say that it's a good movie. A lot of people said it was scary. I wasn't necessarily scared. I'm not trying to say I ain't no punk. I ain't never scared. You know, it's not like that. I was entertained by this movie. I was invested into what was going on. I had a good time. It's a film directed by David Robert Mitchell. And I'll just let you come to your conclusions after you see it. I would just say it's probably one of the best movies playing right now, because it's really not that much to choose from if you're a movie fan, you know. But right now I would say that it's good. I really like the aesthetics of it, because it's, you couldn't tell if it was present day or the 80s, but there are certain things that characters had that you'd be like, certain items that they had, you'd be like, oh, is this in the present day or is it kind of in the past? What the fuck is going on here? But it was a very lo-fi horror movie. It was just the bare essentials. It was just really good. And it just seemed like it was grounded in a reality, which brings which gave it a more ominous feel, if you will. So I enjoyed that movie. It Follows, and it's in wide release now, because when I saw it a week ago, it was only playing in the city and in Montclair, and now I see that it's playing at AMC's around the area. So that would mean it's probably in wider release, and I think that they're gonna put it on demand. So I highly recommend it. I think you'll enjoy it, even if you're not a big horror movie fan, which I personally am not. I will go see a horror movie based on the white girls that are in the movie. So that's kind of how I roll. All right. So Jim Search is my guest. We're going to get to him. Jim, I met him when I did the Three Negroes show this past November, and he's a really cool guy. I've been a fan of the show for a long time. I think they've been doing the show for about a year, and they only have about less than 30 episodes. So I would say, if you're a fan of that podcast, rate and review them, get on them, tweet at them, and make them do more episodes. There's a bunch. I think they made fun of themselves on the last one where they probably recorded 50 of them, but they trashed them for whatever reason. But it's a really great podcast, and Jim's very funny. And we had a really, really fun conversation. And here's evidence of that. This is me talking to Jim Search. I would say that your appearance in the Ray Sani episode was, I would say that episode was one of the blackest episodes of the podcast, because you were cooking, you were frying up something. What were you cooking on the grill?
I was on the grill for a little bit.
And we Ray and I were eating Mexican food. It was like an E-40 video or some like West Coast.
A little
back
bit.
In the day, like,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's up there.
And you can hear me in the back.
Yeah, I hear you there laughing.
So, nah, what the fuck?
It's up there, because I did one where I was talking to Fonte from the Foreign Exchange. We had we took a break to eat chicken wings. So, you know.
I love it.
Up the black level. So we're back in Jim Jam Studios.
Yeah. Are we on?
We're on.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. We're doing it.
Oh,
doing
sweet, man.
Yeah, yeah.
See, here's, like, when I do the Three Negroes, I always surprise Ray and Neruda, because I just start, I hit record, uh-huh. And they're still talking. They're just like, oh, shit, we're on.
Oh, so I did the same. But I did say, we're going to start.
Yeah.
I
don't know. This is like the first, this is probably the third podcast I've been on as a guest.
Really?
Yeah, I'm always the one who's behind the board, and I'm the one who produces the shit. Now you're
on the hot seat. It's not a hot seat.
It's not a lukewarm seat.
If you see me look at my phone, it's just notes,
right,
that I have.
That's fair.
So you're telling me you're in classes, you're in grad school?
Yeah, I'm in grad school at LIU, and I just I have so much shit to do because grad school is not undergrad, and they like, it's just not like they really want you to do a lot of work. They want it to get done in a specific way, but at the same time, there's like a lot of critical thinking, so you have to come up with your own idea of what they want. It's a lot of shit that I've got to do.
2 year or 3 year?
It's supposed to be 2 years, but I'm going part time.
Okay.
Because I work and I also allegedly tell jokes places. Yeah. So like, there's no way I'm going full time and working full time and doing comedy. Like, I will murder myself.
Yeah, that's you gotta pace yourself. You can't.
Hell yeah, man.
I know what that's like. I mean, I did grad school, but it was 3 years, and it was theater, so it wasn't that hard. But you're a teacher. What level do you teach?
I teach kindergarten and first grade.
Okay, how is that?
It's interesting, man. I mean, it's the kids that I work with. Like, I work at a private school, so I mean, I'm a public school kid, so my memories and my idea of what kindergarten, first grade, and public school is like is vastly different than what I'm in right now and what I see these kids doing, you know? Because, like, I'll see kids in an argument, and I'll just go, why hasn't he hit him yet? Like, he's
in first grade. Why is he using decorum?
Yeah, why is he crying? I don't understand. They should be fighting right now. Like, fist fight. Like, that's, you know? But then I'm like, oh, yeah, wait, I'm in charge of these kids. So
and you gotta, like, what is that like? You just like you being the man, being in charge, being the man.
It's pretty dope, man.
Yeah,
there definitely was a younger me who was just like, I'm not going to be in charge of nothing. I'm not going to be the authoritative figure. Now I'm 33, and I'm like,
Jeremy, sit, please. You're gonna turn to page 5.
Oh, Jeremy. It's more along the lines of, you know what? We'll all wait for you. Everyone in here is going to wait for you, because if you have to start talking right now while we're all trying to do this, we'll wait. So take your time.
I got a little chill. And it wasn't like, hey, sit down. It was just like, look, you're gonna do this. And they listen, right?
And it gets dead silent, and then kids look up and go, you can continue. I go, oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. And then I jump right back into whatever.
What part of the city do you teach in?
I teach in the West Village.
Okay.
So,
are they like hippie kids, or what is that like?
It's the school I work at. It's a pretty progressive school, so it's like, you know, there is some hippie kids. There are some artist kids.
Yeah. And
there's also like billionaires kids, because it's a private school.
Sure.
So of course there's going to be the elite are going to be there.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, there is definitely a contingent of kids who are like the artist kids and the crunchy granola, you know, for maybe you and me.
Do they have, like, all the peanut butter allergies and stuff?
Oh, yeah, man. It is a peanut-free school. We are not allowed to have, I mean, there's, like, soy nut butter.
Yeah.
Like, for lunch, but there's no peanut butter.
I know a little bit about that stuff, because, like, with jobs that I used to have, like, where you're working with kids, and it's, like, they would keep kosher, and then you have to make sure that all that stuff. So, is that like something that you have to be on alert to? Like, I don't want any of these kids to die.
Yeah, there is that. But one of the things is that, I mean, we don't let kids bring food into school.
Okay.
So like that's a cardinal sin. No. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. And especially like at lunch, because we serve the kids lunch at school, so we don't have peanut butter in school. Like,
okay.
It's just a fact, you know? Like,
yeah.
We have soy nut butter, which is, again, like, and I know, I think Louis had some bit about it, but it's like, when I was a kid, this didn't exist.
Yeah.
There was, no one had an allergy to peanut butter.
When I did your show at Revival, I want to say it was like November or so.
Yeah, I think it was November.
Selena Kopic was on the show, and she had that bit about, like, I think it was something about kids being assholes, like teenagers being assholes on the train, and she had something about something that had something to do with peanut butter or peanut allergies, and it was like, yeah, right. I guess that's a thing now. You could actually end them.
you could end up murdering a child through peanut butter.
Now, is that school like religious at all, or is it just
it's not
private school?
Yeah, it's a
non-denominational.
Well, non-denominational means that
there's no a religion. I'm not.
Smart. All religions are accepted. Yeah, you are.
I'm not.
It's a secular
school. Secular, got it.
It's a secular school.
Okay.
All religions were. It's not like a Catholic school or a Quaker school. Or
okay.
Like that.
And how long have you been there?
I've been there. This will be my second year.
What's that process like? Going to like from your undergrad experience to where you are now. What's the path?
Well, that's the thing about when you work in a private school is that it's kind of like the Wild West of education.
Uh huh.
In that there's really no discernible path. My undergrad was in hospitality and tourism management.
Whoa. So did you kind of fall into being a teacher?
I totally fell into this.
All right. Let's do this. This is what we'll do.
All right.
Because I always like to get people's origin stories. I always like to know how they came to be. So
sure.
Let's go up from like where you're from and then your path to, let's just explore that, where you're from, and then get to where, when you're a teacher, you fall into teaching and comedy. And let's you talk.
All right. Well, it all started September 2nd, 1981.
All right.
In Binghamton, New York. I grew up in Binghamton, which, you know, I have a joke about it, but it's 85% white, 15% you people. So,
okay.
Let that be an indicator as to how things roll in Binghamton.
That's upstate New York.
It's upstate.
How far from the city?
It's about 3 hours.
Okay.
By bus.
All right.
So, I grew up there. Life was interesting. I mean, I can remember my neighborhood being pretty suburban in that, like, you know, we left the back door unlocked.
Okay.
My friends would come over and my mom would give them dinner and just like that sort of shit. And then eventually as I got older, the neighborhood got shittier and it was almost in Brooklyn, there's like, it's like almost like a checkerboard. Like one neighborhood's great and the other neighborhood's shitty and then another one's great.
Because you were just telling me before we started, like you were pointing out, because you have, Jim has this amazing view from his apartment and this is Crown Heights. And
yeah, we're in Crown Heights.
We could see all the different areas and you were pointing out Brownsville, which is what I hear like is one of the hardest places in the New York City area, right?
Brownsville, East New York, Jamaica, Queens. These are some pretty rough fucking neighborhoods.
One of my favorite rappers, Matthew Ragazzino.
He
talks about like it just brutal. Damian Lemon grew up there. Mike Tyson too.
Yeah, right? Tyson grew up there.
And it's just like super intense. You had brunch there.
I had brunch in Brownsville.
Yeah, that's what's true. That like? Well, explain that. Was it like one of those things where they had those protests where they break like black people come in there and say Black Lives Matter or some shit. What is that? Do you know what that is?
I forget what
the hell. Some fucking hashtag. But anyway.
Well, I mean, there's a hashtag Black Lives Matter.
That sounds so dismissive. Fucking Black Lives Matter. Black people. No, but there was this thing, some like mini movement where people would go into restaurants while people were having brunch and do like a
die-in, like where they had laid out.
So, yeah.
Like they did it in Grand Central.
Yeah.
Like this was at the height of the Eric Garner protests, where they would go stage die. Like everyone would lay down in Grand, like, you know, 1,500 people lay down in Grand Central.
That's insane.
That didn't happen at the brunch.
Okay. Okay.
Because that would put a real spin on it.
Gotcha.
So I get, you know, I mean, I don't live too far from there, so I just took the train. I got off I think Saratoga, maybe?
All right.
And then, like I was telling you, you know, this is, like, right after a snowstorm, and, you know, for the most part, if you go, like, it was maybe 2-3 days after a snowstorm, and if you go into a neighborhood, you'll see, like, they've shoveled or, you know, it's pretty passable sidewalks.
Right.
Not where I was. Mm-hmm. No one shoveled shit. You know, it was just an ice block that I was walking across.
Right.
The streets weren't even, you know, plows hadn't hit the streets yet. Like, it was just some neglect of they just didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, like, you know, I gotta say, like, I went there, you know, Sunday at 2 in the afternoon, so it wasn't like a trash can was on fire and there was, like, you know, like an AK, right. a guy with an AK-47 sure. walking yeah, down yeah. the street. You know what I mean? It's still a neighborhood where, like, people
live yeah.
and have lived there for years sure. and just walk around. So, I mean, was I, you know, because even regardless of the neighborhood, but, like, was I looking around? Yeah, because mm-hmm. I've never been to this neighborhood before.
Right.
So, of course, I'm going to be on my guard because, shit, man, I don't know where the fuck I'm going. So I get to this, get to my friend's house, and I walk in, and there's, you know, mimosas and, wow. you know, eggs that are Eggs Benedict and mm-hmm. just, like, the quintessentially whitest dining experience I had.
Yeah.
And then I walked outside into Brownsville. So it's like...
Was the food good?
Yeah, it was really good, man. my friend's husband, he's an amazing cook, and uh-huh. like just threw it down, and I was just like, yo, this is fucking dope. I'm amazed. And I wanted to stay longer, but we had to tape the Three Negroes,
okay.
so I couldn't stick around. As I subtly slipped that in there.
Sure, no, yeah. we'll get yeah. to that. You're one of the hosts of the Three Negroes podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Great podcast.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah.
We do what we can.
Yeah.
To bring the Negro experience to everybody. So yeah, that was my brunch in Brownsville, man. And it was a lot. It was fun though. What were we talking? Oh, the origin of Binghamton. So
yeah, yeah, you being in is that so? That's is it? What do you, mom and dad?
Just mom.
Just mom.
You know, dad wasn't there. I met dad once, I think, when I was wow. 12.
Was there any explanation why?
He was kind of a dick. So okay. there's that, and he drank a lot. So mm-hmm. my mom was like, I don't know if this is the best place for my kids.
No, are both your parents black?
My mom's white, my dad's black.
Well, no, what's that like? What's that like being a Blake Griffin?
Blake Griffin. the world I live in.
Being a biracial angel. What is explain to me what it's like. What is the joys and the struggle?
The joys and the light skin struggle.
Yeah, explain.
The
yeah.
high yellow struggle.
Break it down.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, again, I have a joke that, you know, some of my comedy does address that.
Yeah.
And, you know. I have a joke, and it's true that, you know, I'm half black, half white, or as the cops would say, black, because,
yeah.
look, if I'm out in the street walking around, a cop's not going to go, well, you know, he's half white, so maybe yeah. he'll only do half the time. No, I'm going to do all the time.
Because you just... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm pretty much lumped in that category of yeah. harassment when it yeah. comes to walking the streets. And, you know, I really, I identify with black culture and I identify with the black community. Like,
mm.
I see myself as black. I mean, obviously I'm biracial, but, yeah, I really do identify more with the black community. Mm. And just, you know, just the shit I like to do.
Right.
You know, and people I like to hang out with.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously in my life and my experiences... There certainly have been those points in my life where I've hung out with black people and I've been too white, and I've mm. been with white people and been too black. So it's...
Yeah. I mean, I'm a couple shades darker than you, and to me, you just look like one of my cousins.
Okay.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, right. you just look like my light-skinned cousin, Quinn.
Oh, okay.
So it's not... But I think there's a... I think you kind of find that anywhere. Like, now being biracial, is it, you say you associate yourself with being black, but is there something, do you feel like you're kind of denying your mom a little bit? And, or
I what's mean, that? I, yes and no. I mean, it's something where, like, obviously I'm, my mom's white. Mm-hmm. I am part white. Like,
yeah.
half of me is white.
Right.
I know that. That's mm-hmm. that's clearly an issue. That's clearly a thing.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily see it as denying her because this is who I am. Like,
right.
this is my experience.
Okay.
I'm not you know, I'm not her. Her experience isn't my experience.
Right.
And the things that I like to do are the things that I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I'm into are the things that I'm into. And the way that I look is the way that I look. So I don't look at it necessarily as denying her her being white, you know?
Because I always wondered that, because you'd hear stories about, you know, just the biracial celebrities, like your Tiger Woods, your, not necessarily Blake Griffin, but maybe like a Jeter.
Right.
And it's just about the black side has that focus, but it's almost like, but then you have that, I guess there's this duality, but at the same time, black is the one that's being focused on, but it's your journey and how you perceive yourself and how you...
Exactly. I mean...
That makes sense.
And it's interesting because I had this talk with somebody, it was like a week ago maybe, about how... Duh, it was my barber. Okay. We were talking about the black experience and how there's really no way that you can exactly pinpoint what the black experience is, because every person who's black has a different experience.
Right.
I mean, we share some commonalities, being black, but my black experience is completely different than your black experience, as it is different than someone else's, and, you know, someone else. So it's, for someone to, you know, explain to you what my black experience is, it may not fit the mold of the stereotypical experience.
But I think at the same time, I have an idea of what it's like to be you. I mean, I had this story where go visit family in North Carolina. We'd stop at KFC or something.
Right.
And my dad would be watching my dad be there with my dad. And my dad's a relatively friendly guy. And you see somebody, he talks to him, and the guy is black. And it's like, do you know that guy? And he would be like, no. But he knows him. Like, if you and I were in a town, and you, it would be like, I know you.
Right.
You know, it's that sort of thing that's kind of inherent to the struggle.
Well, there's that. I mean,
or to existence, not necessarily the struggle, sorry.
Like, what I'm saying, like, I get that, because there's definitely been moments where I've been in a job that's predominantly white, and there's one black person across the room, and you go, see you.
Yeah.
I see you over there. Let's talk in a little bit. Let's figure this out.
Right.
So, I mean, there's that. But what I think, what I was trying to convey is that my personal life of being black is different than, as is anybody's. As, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm breaking the mold by any stretch.
No, I know what you mean.
But it's, so when you talk to a black person about their experience of being black, of course there's going to be common threads that exist.
Yeah.
But there's going to be unique experiences that people have, because we're all different people and we live different lives.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Do you ever feel like you're in a black moment and you're just like, this is so fucking black, and I love it.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I think, and it's not like a superiority thing. It's not like, it's just, I was in the barbershop last weekend, and it was Saturday. It was all these guys in there, and they're talking shit, and, you know, it was one, they were drinking beer in the barbershop. It was just like, I was in the hood part of my city, kind of, and it was just like, this is fucking black.
And I
went to go get the Kendrick Lamar album. I was just like, this is fucking great.
And I'm having a black moment, you know? You blacked out, dare I say.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's funny you bring that up, because I was in the barbershop, this was maybe 2 months ago, and do you ever watch the channel Investigative Discovery?
No.
It's this show.
Heard of it.
Yeah, they have the show called Wives with Knives.
Okay.
And it's, you know, of course, it's wives that flip out and kill their husbands or try and murder them or whatever. And I'm watching Wives with Knives in the barbershop, and the commentary is fucking hilarious. Right.
Yeah.
Like, there's this part, well, I mean, of course, the episode that we watched, this is the elevator pitch of the show, but it was this guy, there's this chick, white chick, who basically, she's beautiful, and her whole life everyone was like, you're beautiful. Like, her life was framed around her beauty, right?
Right.
Which, you know, they brought in, like, the psychologist was like, well, this was the birth of her narcissism, was that, you know, everyone valued her beauty, but they didn't know who the fuck she was as a person. Mm. They didn't see that, you know, she was intelligent or, you know, all that shit. So then she, of course, turns into this crazy narcissist, and then she meets this other dude who's has money, surprise, and they get married. Blown away by that he didn't fucking work at, yeah, he didn't work at Duane Reade, and then yeah. She goes, I'm like, oh wow, this guy behind the counter, there's something about him.
But yeah.
Tie this one down. No, he was like a furniture magnet in Jersey or some shit like that, right? So they get together, and, you know, everything's idyllic at first, and of course, her insecurities come out, his insecurities come out, and they just fucking hate each other. Meanwhile, like, the guys in the barbershop just like, yo, you can't fuck that bitch into loving you, so you know. Yeah, that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
You can't fuck that bitch into loving you.
Yeah,
so
man.
Then at the end of the show, you know, she tries to murder this dude, like, they get in a fight, she stabs him, she then gets off, like, she's not charged of anything.
She's hot.
Because she's hot, and again, surprise, I'm not blown away that this pretty white woman managed to avoid jail time, so.
Yeah, it's like people are so fascinated by the Jinx, and it is very interesting. Did you see it, mm-hmm. Robert Durst? And it's you guys talked about it.
I like the Neruda and Ray telling us. I don't need to watch. I should.
It's worth seeing, but it's like, and I think Ray may have hit the nail on the head, but I think she might have said something about this guy's rich and he's white. I mean, what if you have money, you can get away with murder, mm-hmm. and you're white, and it was just like,
well, if you're white, then you need less money. I mean, you definitely have to have a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
but you'll need less money, comparatively speaking, to say, like, OJ, who was black and got away with murder, and, you know, sorry, guys, that's how it went.
Wait, whoa. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Sorry, guys. Allegedly murdered someone.
But he did steal his own shit.
He did.
And that's why he's in prison.
And that's, yeah, and of course they're just basically, like, you know, of course the justice system was like,
you gotta get this,
all right, you got away with it this time, but if you so much as jaywalk, you're doing life.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he was like, well, gotta steal my own memorabilia.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Got it's, this motherfucker.
It's true. Now, since we're on blackness, and I want to get back to Binghamton, but we were talking Kendrick Lamar. You got the album. What do you think?
I like it. Mm. I know some people have heralded it as the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
I think conceptually it was done well.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it really played out like a movie, like a book. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah.
And you follow the thread of the album, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I gave it a couple listens, and I'm a fan. I really dig his shit. I think I was talking to a friend of mine last night about it, and his gripe was that, you know, he's trying to get down in some, you know, black power shit and, you know, empowered by being black. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's not a popular thing to talk about. Like, that's not selling records. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not hitting the mainstream. That's not something that people are checking for.
But he is, though.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, is that people are checking for him.
Yeah.
He broke, like, Spotify records when it came
He's
out.
Number one on the Billboard 200. Like, that's all music, right? Isn't that every genre, he's at the top? Yeah.
And, but, so, you know, me, you know, being a proponent of, you know, being black and proud,
mm-hmm.
it's great that this music has made a resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, the Public Enemies, the, you know, the Arrested Development, the, you know, the KRS-One, like, that sort of shit,
mm-hmm.
you know, really took a back seat for such a long time that Kendrick, and stuck to it. Because, you know, I can't really chart his history too much, but I'm pretty sure that when he was, you know, cutting records and doing what he was doing, people weren't checking for, because it wasn't a popular thing. But he stuck with it, and he had the conviction, and people are noticing it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, even with D'Angelo's album coming out, like, the aesthetically, Black Messiah is black. Like, it's the funk, and I remember, I think Damian Lemon said something like, you could fry fish to that music. Like, it's just like that, so black.
Yeah.
And Kendrick Lamar has that same feeling. And it's like, I'm going to be like a hipster, right, with Kendrick Lamar. I've started with Overly Dedicated, I think that was 2010. And then I said, you know, okay, this guy is good. Like, I listened to it the first time. I was like, all right, this guy is good. Okay. And then I went back to it, and I was like, this guy's really fucking good. Because, you know, like, sometimes you listen one time, you're like, all right. And then you come back, and I started listening to his other stuff. Then when he put out Section 80, right, which to me was the start of, because he had Kendrick Lamar EP, which is like, he had some good songs on there. It's like, okay, this guy's a good rapper.
Right.
And then you get Overly Dedicated, which is strong. It's technically an album. But then you introduce all these characters in Section 80 and the narrative that he sort of provides. And it's just sort of like, just being a fan of literature and like, just kind of being a book nerd a little bit.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, this guy fucking stuck his foot in this shit.
Right.
And then, you know, Good Kid, Mad City comes out, and to me, I mean, that's almost doing some Catcher in the Rye shit. That's every 90s movie, every 90s urban gangster movie. It's fantastic. So that's a masterpiece. Then he puts this out, and it's almost like you got the themes of survivor's remorse and the devil and God, all this stuff. And then I was wrestling with this because you were here when I recorded Ray.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I think, you know, him, the Billboard interview, people didn't like it because he was saying, you know, black people, we got to love ourselves. And I really felt like that he wasn't, saying, like, pull your pants up.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I can only speak to what I know about it.
Yeah.
I didn't read the interview.
Okay.
But yeah, from what I've gathered, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's saying that if black people took more pride in themselves, mm-hmm, they wouldn't be harassed and they wouldn't be fucked with.
To a certain degree, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't agree with that,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, there's definitely been people over the years who haven't bothered anybody, black people who just were going about their business and were fucked with.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is, I mean, I understand the sentiment of, you know, if you motivate yourself and, you know, then if you respect yourself, people will respect you. I get that.
Yeah.
Right. But there's definitely people in the world, it doesn't matter how much respect that you give yourself,
they're still
in a fuck. It's like that old joke of, you know, what do you call a black guy with a PhD? A nigger. Like, that's true. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, and it's like, even like, for, say, for example, you know, I've had experiences where I've had shit happen to me where I've had to, like, call the police. I hate calling the police.
You want to talk about one of them?
Well, yeah, I don't give a fuck. It wasn't even that silly. It was just a silly moment. It was actually Max Cohen and I. Do you know Max?
I know of him.
Yeah, we run a show at Revival, and the Pizza Sunday, and we always get two pizzas for the people, you know, people show up or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I swear, like, you can, who else was there? Alexis Guerreros, no, Chris Milhouse was there.
Okay.
After this all happened.
Uh-huh.
But, so we get the pizza and the guy shows up, we give him the money and he takes our money and the pizza and leaves.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the look on your face explains how we, because we're just like, this doesn't fucking happen. Like, what's going on? So, like, we're in a hot foot pursuit after this dude. Like, yo, where the fuck are you going with their pizza? Eventually, it gets to the point where we're just like, all right, we have to talk. We have to tell the cop. Like, we have to call the cops or talk because I can't.
That's weird as fuck.
It was beyond weird, man. I don't know if it was like a Kaiser Sose moment for him, where he's just like, no one's gonna believe these guys if I just fucking take their money and the pizza,
mm-hmm,
and go. But
white dude,
Spanish dude.
Okay.
So At any rate, this is all going down, and I'm like, well, look, Max, I'm not going to beat up this pizza guy to take our money or pizza back, so you have to talk to the cops. Obviously, Max, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, in my head, I'm just like, well, I don't like talking to the police, because in my head, they're looking at me, I have to prove that this guy, like, the ultimate onus is on me. Like, what did I do to make this happen? In my head is what they're thinking. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like, do I really want to have... I don't want to have to talk to them, because it's going to be an explanation. It's going to be victim blaming.
You know? So many mental gymnastics involved with you trying to... Yeah.
Yeah, just like... And again, I mean, look, maybe other people... Maybe people who aren't black experience it, and they're just like, God, I'm going to have to... They're going to victim blame the situation, and I'm going to have to explain to them why... But, like, for me, it's like, they're looking at me, and they're like, well, all right, what did he do? Like, what did you do
to the pizza guy?
Yeah, what would bring on that pizza guy to be like, I'm fearing for myself to get out of it? But, like, it's those moments like that.
Well, so did you get it resolved? What happened?
Oh, so... Yeah.
What did Max talk to
him? Well, yeah, well, here's the thing, is that this is, like, right before the show. Max and I are, like, back at Joey Pepperoni's. I'll throw him under the bus. They stole our money. Fuck him. Yeah. They stole our money and our pizza. So we go back to Joey Pepperoni, and Max and I are standing outside, and this is, like, it's, like, the show starts at 7. It's, like, 7:15, and I'm just like, all right, Max, you got to stay here and deal with this. I'll go back and host the show. So I run back, host the show. Max calls me. He's just like, yeah, cops said there's nothing they can do. I'm just like, what? And they go, yeah. Apparently, it's now, because this is so insane, and this is the gymnastics the police do to just get out of doing work, I think, is they said, well, because you bought pizza, it's goods and services, so you'd have to file with the Better Business Bureau about it.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. And I'm like, so you mean to tell me that because we bought pizza and this guy took our money, I now have to go to the Better... They're like, yeah, there's nothing we can do. So Joey Pepperoni got $20 and some old pizza that just...
That's weird.
But it was such a weird experience to have happen. But again, it comes back to like, who's going to talk to the cops? I don't want to talk to them.
Right.
Because they're just... The experiences that... They've just never been helpful to me. Mm. They're just not a helpful lot.
Yeah, I'm very wary of them. I can say shit afraid sometimes.
Hell yeah. They're not... they have an unbridled amount of power, and they have a certain perception mm-hmm. of black males aged 18 to 35. So it's
18
like,
and forever.
Yes, 18 to 780.
In utero till.
Yes, whatever, man. That's true.
They don't fucking care.
From zygote to sarcophagus, they're yep. fucking looking at you like, well, that zygote probably did. Why is that zygote trying to steal an egg over there? What's that black zygote doing yep. right now? We better
black
get him.
Zygotes.
That's going to be the name of my new hipster album, Black Zygotes. Black. I'm going to go to Williamsburg and crank out an album.
So was that that mindset like built in Binghamton?
Yes.
Basically? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You said suburban. Is it suburban and rural? Or is
yes.
It,
yeah. It's a weird, it's this, I mean, now it's different because it's a more burnt out industrial city. But
would that be considered a Rust Belt city? Or was it, what kind of industry is there?
It doesn't, like, geographically, it doesn't fall in the Rust Belt.
Uh-huh.
But the industry, like, their economics would fit into a Rust Belt scenario. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was heavy in the industry. There was Endicott Johnson, which made shoes.
Okay.
And that was huge in the 50s. IBM was there. I think EA Link might still be there. I mean, this is all, like computer shit.
Binghamton
University.
Is that a big state school?
Yeah. It's actually one of the better SUNY schools.
That's what I was going to ask. Well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. The University of Buffalo, I think, is in there. And SUNY Binghamton are the two, like, premier schools.
Tony Kornheiser went there.
I know. Tony went to Binghamton?
Yeah.
God bless. Comic?
I don't know. Oh, you don't know Tony? Are you a sports guy?
I'm not a sports guy.
Oh, okay, okay. He's a sports journalist, and he has a show on ESPN called PTI, but he's one of the best.
Oh, duh, I know.
Bald-headed guy.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
white
yeah,
guy,
yeah.
Jewish guy.
He's yeah, great. And he always fights with the black dude.
Wilbon. Right. Okay.
Yeah, as you can tell, sports, I can play basketball. Barely play basketball.
Oh, you're doing barely is better than me. I gave up.
You gave up on
I
ball.
Gave up at, like, 13.
When did I give up? I gave up in fifth grade, so, what was I, 10?
10, 11, 10, yeah.
Yeah. And then I tried when I was 16. I tried to play CYO, Catholic League. And my teammates were a bunch of shitheads, and I was just like, you guys are fucking garbage. Not like garbage players, just garbage people.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, I was just like, you guys are garbage individuals. I will have nothing to do with this.
Yeah. I just suck.
I can I have a pretty sick three. Like,
okay.
I can park outside and shoot. In my height, I was pretty tenacious on defense. Like, I just didn't, I didn't give a fuck. I would do what I could with the ball from you.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I had nothing.
In my prime at 12, I was pretty good. Like, I could shoot, could play a little defense, could not dribble to save my life.
Mm.
Could not dribble.
I'm left-handed. So
me too.
But
I don't shoot left-handed.
Oh, really?
Righty.
Oh, I shoot left. I shoot left. I drive left. Like, that's, pretty much if you just, I can't reveal, like.
Okay, yeah, you don't want
to. I can't put that out into the mat, into the ether, how to beat me at basketball.
Okay.
What was I going to say? Oh, so, yeah.
Binghamton. What type of, I'm just getting a geographical makeup of it. And
is this the map? Okay. See, but there's a map from Binghamton to New York.
Okay.
And all those bus tickets around that frame it are just a sample of the bus ride that I've taken.
Okay.
To get to and from Binghamton.
Yeah. I've been to Hawley, Pennsylvania.
There's Holly. I see Holly.
I did a show there once, and let's see. I'm just trying to look at the neighbor. Yep. You know how far I've been up. Now I was in Albany. I've been to Albany.
Albany is the
further east.
Yeah, it's east. It's off the map.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah.
But
it's beautiful up there, though. Like I've just been started doing the road a little recently, and then you just go up 87. You just kind of see how. My head's always on a swivel because you're trying to look at stuff. But so Binghamton's further west.
Okay. Yeah, it's northwest. Don't get me wrong. Like even a drive into Binghamton's beautiful. Like up there, I mean, just there's mountains, there's forests, there's shit up there that you go, oh wow, I would not see this in New York.
What caused the city to go down? I was talking to Kyle Grooms last week. And he was talking about how there was industry in New Jersey, but like there, once the drugs came in, like that's what fucked everything up.
There is that component of Binghamton as well. We'll go back as to where Binghamton started to decline. It was a Rust Belt scenario. Like all the industry moved out. A lot of people put all their eggs in that basket of industry. So now people are fucked. There aren't a lot of jobs. I mean, obviously there's the education sector, there's the police and fire department sector. So, like, there is a little bit of, finance. I don't even want to call it that. There's, like, a Merrill Lynch building in downtown Binghamton.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of that opportunity left, and then you compile that with brain drain from Binghamton University. Because you have these kids that graduate who are like, well, I just graduated from college. I'm not sticking around this
time. They leave.
They come to New York. They go to Rochester. They go to Buffalo. They leave Binghamton. So, you have these young people who have educations, but are like, well, I don't want to, where am I going
to
work?
No, did you go to Binghamton?
No, I went to...
You had to get out.
I went to Niagara University.
Okay.
Which is right near Buffalo, which is...
All right.
It'd be, like, on top of the wall.
Or gotcha.
Like, way up the wall. So I went there for hospitality, tourism management, and then...
Did you know you wanted to do... Well, we'll get back to that. So Binghamton, and you're talking about the area.
Oh, so the decline.
Decline, okay. So brain drain.
The brain drain was another component, and then probably when I was in my early 20s, cocaine hit Binghamton, and it hit it.
So that's kind of late, because you're only like a year younger than me. You 81?
Yeah, I'm 81.
So I turned 35 last month.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
So, I mean, cocaine hit Binghamton when I was, again, in my early 20s, but okay. Hit it hard.
Like, oh, okay.
There was a lot of people doing it, a lot of people selling it, a lot of just big, big cocaine. And the thing is, and it's always kind of been like the age-old story, but, you know, Binghamton's a small enough town where if you're from New York, you can take drugs from New York, go to Binghamton, sell it for a lot more, and the police aren't going to know shit about what you're doing. Ice Cube actually has a song very similar called My Summer Vacation, where it's like the base of the song is there's four of his boys are in L.A., and they're like, well, let's go to St. Louis and start selling drugs. So they go to St. Louis, and they just blow up, and then the St. Louis dudes catch wind, like the local drug dealers catch wind of it, and they shoot it out, and then they all get arrested as that happens. So his summer vacation is going to prison. But that story plays out in Binghamton in that you'll have dudes from New York who are like, all right, well, let me pick a small town, set up shop, and make a bunch of money.
Because they got the college kids, right?
You got college kids.
How big is that? How many undergrads are in this?
Ooh, I couldn't tell you. I could tell you percentage-wise.
Yeah, percentage.
Like, I mean, a good 90% of them are from New York, and the rest are sprinkled around the country.
Yeah.
But actual population, I don't know, man. That's a weird number.
Okay, because I know, like certain schools, like a big... Like, University of Maryland, a state school, would be, like, 20,000 students or something.
I wouldn't say 20. I would, if I had to guess, maybe 10,000.
Okay.
I'll say 10,000.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Again, I could be totally off.
Fact checkers, you know, tweet at us, let us know.
Yeah, let me know. And I'm so ashamed I don't know my hometown.
What the fuck, man? You don't? I don't know mine.
I claimed Binghamton. I love Binghamton as much as I hate it, but... And it totally sounds like I'm just besmirching Binghamton.
No, I just want to know. I'm always fascinated by where people are from and just what that's like. And I know, because I thought about you... when I watched this movie, The Rewrite, the Hugh Grant movie that just...
Yeah.
And they filmed it up there. Like, he's this Academy Award-winning movie writer, screenwriter. He gets this award, and then he kind of loses fame, and he's trying to get his life together, and he gets this job. He unwillingly takes his job at Binghamton University and sort of, like, finds himself. Does that... kind of mark the area coming back a little bit, or like,
yeah, I mean,
pumping life into it.
There, you know, as much as I say that there is a drought and of shit to do, there is a resurgence of people trying to get that going, of just like having events in Binghamton, you know, like nightlife stuff, and you know, having theater and trying to just revitalize the, I guess, entertainment sector, or like just trying to get shit to do there. Because, you know, what's ended up happening is if you want to go out in Binghamton, you just go out and get drunk and fight. Like, that's pretty, I mean, it's a small town. It's a, you know, there wasn't a lot of shit to do. So I actually read the local paper, the Binghamton local paper, which I often check to see if there's people I went to high school with who went to jail, because I'll check the blotter and be like, oh.
Do you do that for fun?
Yeah, a little bit. And just to catch up on who's who. There's actually an app that...
Are you serious?
Well, there's an app for like the Sheriff Watch. And you can see...
Oh, I thought it was maybe which one of my high school friends went to jail. I thought there was an app for that. I'd be like, Jesus, that's really...
Well, there should be. I think that'd be a pretty funny app to
copyrighted
have.
Here.
Yep, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Yeah, so I read a little write-up about the movie.
Okay.
Hugh Grant was in, and I was like, oh. And then he said something about how he loved the town, and it was an idyllic town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, there's definitely, like, there's scenery, like, there's a different, it's a rural, like, a rural town in the sense of there's mountains, and there's forests, there's river, like, there's nice nature shit to do. But, so, cocaine happened, as I segue back to cocaine. Cocaine happened in my early 20s there, and I watched a lot of people doing it and selling it and all sorts of shit. And then after that, there was heroin became pretty big, huge in my town. Like, you know, I know a lot of, I know a lot of people who've overdosed on heroin in the last, like, I'd say 5 years. So there's a drug epidemic that's hit pretty hard, and there aren't a lot of jobs. So yeah, it's a pretty economically depressed city. As I often say, the major export of Binghamton is depression and alcoholism. So if you want any of that, they got plenty. But I don't think I, as much as I say how bad it was and became, you know, if I didn't grow up there and the shit that I didn't, if I didn't see that shit, I probably wouldn't have gotten into comedy, because it was just like, this is real.
No, now you talked about the, I'm interested in just hearing your path as just like growing up as a kid, where you say you're not black enough to be with the black people, not white enough to be with the white people,
or black enough to be
black enough.
White, too black for the white people, too white for black people.
Yeah. Right. What was that like? What did you do to combat that, or to just rise above?
I mean, I say that it didn't necessarily, I don't want to say it totally permeated my experience growing up. It happened, you know. You know, I can remember, I had black friends growing up.
Yeah.
I actually reunited with one of my boys. I went back to Binghamton earlier this month, and we caught up, and he's like, hey, man, you know, we shot the shit. But, you know, it was really one of those things where I can remember, you know, black kids being like, why do you talk like that? And like, what do you mean? Like, you talk white. And it's like, well, I don't, you know, and at the time, you know, I'm what, 10, 11, and I'm like, no, I don't. I talk how I talk, you know. But, you know, so it's instances like that, you know, where you're just like, well, as a kid, you're like, well, no, this is just who I am. Like, this is how I talk. This is just how I roll. And then, you know, there was obviously, like, I had white friends who, you know, I was listening to rap music, and they're like, that sucks. Why do you listen to that shit? And
it's like, what were you listening to as a kid?
What was I listening to? Because
we grew up around this. We grew up at the same time, so.
Public Enemy.
Okay.
See, I was a real, like, militant.
You were really, wow, dude.
Yeah, man.
How old were you?
I had to have been in, like, sixth grade, I think.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Sixth grade, I was listening to, like, Bell Biv DeVoe, Another Bad Creation. Like, I was mainly an R&B guy. And then I liked Fresh Prince. When I did your show, I knew the song to pick.
Yeah.
I was like, you saw my blinker, bitch. Will Smith, Fresh Prince. then like, I kind of would have caught up to you a little bit, like, maybe, like, 13, 13, 14 was Tupac.
Okay.
West Coast, like, Snoop, all that I was heavy into that.
I should rewind the tape a little bit.
Okay.
Because my, you know, when I was in, like, I want to say fourth grade, maybe third, fourth grade, Criss Cross.
Yeah, of course.
Was kind of, like, that was, like, I dabbled in it. I wasn't, like, totally, I mean, I really segued into rap music probably in, like, sixth grade with Public Enemy, and as, like, 7th, 8th grade, I got into, like, Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
I think The Chronic might have been the first tape I had.
Really? Okay.
My first rap tape.
My first... It would have been Midnight Marauders.
Oh, okay.
See, I was a little bit like, I was like Tribe, and then like
De La Soul.
Not, I knew who they were. It was like, but it was like Tribe, Outkast, and then like that just Warren G, Snoop. Okay. And that's why when I first heard, Good Kid, Mad City, Kendrick's first major right. label, when he had MC 8 on there,
yeah.
I was like, holy shit, like that's like a
ain't
fucking...
nothing but a Compton
thing. Yeah, man, so that's why I was like all excited, because like I really liked that, and it was just really weird that I was this suburban Catholic school, if you think back, like
right.
suburban Catholic school kid, you know, black Kevin Arnold, like I said on the show, and just like these fucking like... The K goes blah blah like Spice One and all mm-hmm. that shit. It was just like mm-hmm. crazy. So, but it wasn't until like my high school where it's like there. Oh, Chris, there's a guy named Redman. There's a guy mm-hmm. named Method Man. There's yeah. Keith Murray and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I got real into Wu-Tang.
Okay.
And then yeah, it was pretty much Wu-Tang from 10th grade on.
Okay. Let's diverge a little bit. You have an obsession with Ice-T.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Yo, man, I've always been a fan of Ice, man. I love, like, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
I went back and forth with Ray because she's like, you just like him ironically. I'm like, you don't understand. I don't think you get it.
Okay.
But no, I've just always been a fan since like.
Is he your light skinned Jesus?
He is the light skinned Oprah.
Like, okay,
I understand why. I understand how white women feel about Oprah.
All right.
I get it. I understand the love and how time stops when uh-huh. she comes into a room. If Ice walked in, I'd go, sign everything.
That would be the guy that you would be like. Couldn't control yourself.
Yeah, and he's like, and you get a gun, and you get a gun, and you get a gun. You know, I'm assuming that's what would happen if he walked in, you know? Like, and you get a pimp cane, and you get a pimp cane.
So where did it start?
It started, New Jack City.
Okay,
And I remember hearing New Jack Hustler, and I was like, who the fuck is this dude?
Hustler.
Word, I pulled the trigger lock. Like, that's when it started, and I was like, yo, and you know, look, he's a light-skinned dude, and like, and he didn't take any shit.
Yeah.
He was a tough motherfucker. So it's like, as a light-skinned kid, you're just like, whoa, this guy's not taking any shit, and no one's fucking with him, and when they do, he sets a foot in their ass. Yeah. And he was legit, I mean, and he really talked about what was going on in his life, like,
yeah,
you know, I've obviously read his biography, his autobiography.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked about a lot of the videos that he shot back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, all the guns in that were real, and all the cars in it were real, and all those are all my hustling buddies that I knew. Because it didn't occur to me to lie about what I was doing or what was going on. Or, like, renting a car, or renting... You know what I mean? Like,
it was
for
real
a video. Cool. He's like, nah, man, all these people had all that shit. I mean, he used to be a fucking jewel thief. Like, he was breaking into jewelry stores, and he had money. So, you know, I think he's a very interesting dude. You know, he's got a crazy story. You know, he ended up in New Jack City. The way he got the part was, this is as he tells in the book,
okay,
is he was at this party in L.A., and he was in the bathroom, and he was just talking shit to somebody or whatever. And he said, if you could find a molecule of me in my body that actually gave a fuck about that guy, maybe he'd have a chance. And Mario Van Peebles heard him say that and was like, I want you in my movie.
Wow.
That's how it happened. And, you know, of course, he's like, I'm a fucking rapper, and I hang out with criminals. Like,
all he plays is cops now.
And ironically enough, he plays, you know. But as he said, and I think common sense would dictate, is like, what, you're going to be a 55-year-old gangster?
Hell yeah. No, I ain't mad at him.
Well, as a staunch ICE supporter, all of his decisions are the right decisions. I actually called up his podcast.
Did you get on?
I got on.
I didn't know you had a podcast.
The Final Level podcast.
So what happened? Now, did you freak geek out?
I was sitting in your chair, actually, when I called.
Could you compose? Were you composed?
Well, yeah, I kept it together. Because it was one of those things where, like, it was the first episode, I follow him on Twitter. Put up the phone numbers, like, call his number and you'll get on, you know, I'm taking calls from fans.
Right? Okay.
I'm like, all right, well, fuck it, I'll call. So I called and, you know, it's ringing and I don't think I'm going to get on.
Yeah.
It's like, who the fuck, like, this right. isn't going to happen. So I'm sitting there and I hear, yo, what up, you on the phone with Ice? I'm like, hello?
Oh, shit.
I'm sorry? This is Ice-T. And he's like, yeah, what's up, man? How's it going? I'm like, what the fuck? And no, like, we talked for maybe 15 minutes.
Really?
About the business, like, show business.
What did you talk, like, what? That's awesome.
It was insane. Like, I posted.
Give me some of the highlights.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I told him that, you know, I told him I do stand-up, I'm in comedy and,
yeah.
and all that. And, you know, he's like, how long have you been doing it? And I'm like, well, you know, I've been doing it, I think it was like 4 years at the time. So he's like, I've been doing it 4 years, and just, I don't, you know, I was kind of just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I was having those moments.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, think about it like this. Think about how many people out there want to do comedy, want to go up, and never do.
Yeah.
You are so much further in the game than they are.
Yeah.
And you got to look at it like that. Like, this is a race. And mm-hmm. you're beating a lot of people who just don't have the balls to go out and do it. You're out there doing it. And I was like, wow. And then, you know, of course, you know, and then, we, you know, he's like, you know, because then, you know, a lot of people, he's like, a lot of people come up to me and they're like, you know, Ice, I want to make a rap record. I want to, you know, I want to make some music.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Ice said, do you rap? And they're like, nope. And he's like, well, maybe you should start there before
yeah.
you try and, you know, make a rap record. So, you know, we talked a lot about that and just, you know, staying in the game and just, it's a marathon.
You do know? You have, like, an MP3 of that?
I don't. And this is what happened. It was the first episode and I listened for it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get on because the equipment fucked up. But that, like,
but you still had that moment, though.
Yo, man, I
you'll never forget that shit.
I immediately went on Facebook. I was just like, yeah, I was just on the phone with Ice-T, and well, here's the thing is that towards the end of the conversation, he goes, "So you do comedy, right?" I'm like, yeah. He goes, "Are you funny?"
He said it like, "Are you funny, motherfucker?"
Yeah, yeah. Yo, you funny, motherfucker?
Like you were Poogie or some shit?
Yeah, yeah. Just like tore my shirt open. Yeah. And I had some wires on me. They found me. So yeah, he's like, "Are you funny?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, I'm funny. Like, that's kind of." He's like, "All right, well, tell me a joke." I'm like, "What?" You know, like,
yeah.
Obviously any other person on the planet who's just like, "Are you funny?" You're just gonna fuck yourself. Like, what do you mean am I funny? On top of that, to be like, tell me a joke, but it's Ice-T. Like,
yeah.
Of course I'm going to tell him a joke. So, I told him, what joke did I tell him? Oh, I knew the audience, and I said, you know, I'm half black, half white, or as the police would say, black, and let it, that's the joke,
yeah.
right? So, I hear just dead silence for maybe like 5-6 seconds, I'm just like, what? And he starts dying laughing. And I'm like,
that's amazing.
And you just hear him laugh. I hear him laughing, and I'm just like, he's like, yo, you're funny, man. You're gonna get there. And I'm just like, Ice, look, if it ends here, if the train ends here, I made you laugh. So
yeah,
I did it.
That's
and,
it.
And now, and then after that, well, of course, I'm riding high. I do my boy Corey Rodriguez's podcast, 30 Jobs Later.
Okay.
And we talk about the same story I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I told him on that podcast.
Yeah.
And a week later, I get an email from the producer of the final podcast.
Okay.
Our final level podcast. And he's like, yo, I heard you on this podcast. You were the guy that called up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you remembered me.
Yeah.
Sent me this real long Facebook message. It was like, you were really funny. Ice was quoting your joke after the fact, like, after
wow.
you were done. And I was just like, what the fuck? It was so surreal. And then I was like, well, he told me what happened with the equipment as to how I didn't get on. And I was like, well, I'd love to get on again. He's like, all right, we'll call up, you know, at this time, blah, blah, blah. So I got on I think it's the 7th episode.
Okay.
At the end.
Nice.
And
how long ago was this?
last year, I think.
Oh, shit, so that's real recent.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I mean, the call was a little bit shorter because, you know, it's like there were so many people calling.
But did you make, did he remembered you, right?
Yeah, he remembered me. And then I told him, he was like, all right, tell me a joke. So
told him another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I told him about how I have a lot of white friends. And I'm their only black friend, so mm-hmm. they want to know a lot about black people, so they ask me. Yeah. So I'm a lot like Nigipedia to them, so they do all the research. I'm a walking Nigipedia. And he immediately stops me right there and just like, yo, Nigipedia is a dope word.
Yeah.
That's a dope word. That's hilarious.
That's what's up, man.
So
that's awesome.
It was, again, you know, so it's a pretty authentic admiration for Ice-T. It's not out of any sense of irony.
That's great that your love, your hero, just likes what you do.
To have that sort of validate, you know, and of course, you know, this is obviously, you know, this is a game of, are you sure you're going to have those moments of doubt of just like,
oh, yeah,
going to happen? Like, what am I fucking doing?
But those moments like that is those moments will carry you the rest of your life throughout your whole career. Cause you can always have, there's always these touchstones that you can look back and say, well, this thing happened, so I did make the right decision, you know? So it kind of propels you,
sustains
you.
And I think, you know, especially when we look down at it, but we all look for validation at some point.
We all do. Hell, you know? Yeah.
I mean, that's what stand-up is. I mean,
yeah.
You're talking to a crowd and you're trying to be validated.
Listen to me.
This is a funny thing I thought of. Let's just have fun and just like me. Look at me.
Yeah.
To have the person that you look like, you really look up to and idolize, and you read their books and you talk to them, and he's like,
yeah,
you know, you're funny. You're like, whoa. Like, that's a level of admiration. You know, and it carries you. Because, like, after that, I was, you know, I was bulletproof for 2 weeks. I was
just like, of course.
There ain't shit you can tell. Like, you could heckle me all you want, but you don't know who I've talked to. Like,
my buddy Ernest Waddell played his son on Law and Order.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he seems to be like a cool dude.
Every account I've ever heard of anyone hanging out or talking to Ice has been nothing but good things. I've never heard anyone being like, he was a dick. Like, fuck that. Like, he's got such a level of perspective.
Yeah.
Like, in his book, he talks about how he'll be on the set of Law and Order and, you know, shit'll fuck up or, you know, something will go crazy. And he keeps his composure. And, of course, people around him are just like, yo, Ice, why aren't you flipping out? What, you know, what's going on? And Ice is like, look, man, I got friends that are doing life in Chino. Life isn't so bad for me right now. Like, I could be there, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not. And in fact, if anything, I'm living
yeah,
a pretty dope life.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, this guy didn't get my, you know, Avion water, I'm going to be okay. You know, like, and that's a level of perspective that I, you know, shit, I don't even think regular people have. Like,
no,
non-celebrities don't have that level of perspective of, like, you know, like, even earlier today, I was like, I got all this grad school shit I got to do, and fuck, this is such a nightmare. It's like, is it really a nightmare?
Well, I'm trying to think of your reality is what your reality is. Just like that's your cross to bear is your cross to bear.
Right.
And like, you're just sort of like living it. But I think our culture, our society now is super self-absorbed.
Oh.
And I have to snap myself out of it every now and then. It's like, I'm doing my life and my goals. And you gotta be like, I have to participate in the universe, you know.
Well, and also, you know, I think you look at, you know, your problems. Do you know how people would kill to have your problems? Do you know how people would kill to have my problems?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would kill to have Ice-T's problems. Like, mm-hmm. I'd kill to have Chris Rock's issue. You know what I mean? Like, it's all relative, and it's all relative to who
right,
you are,
right.
And it's all perspective. Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, you know, and again, you look at your life and you look at how shit's going. You know, I have my own apartment. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have a place to go. And,
yeah.
Like, there are people out there who don't have shit.
I was thinking, you know, I was doing a show last night, and I was thinking, I told the crowd, I said, you know, I turned 35 last month, and I was thinking about, you know, when you reach an age like that, you think, you start to reflect on your life, and you think, am I doing what I want to do? And, you know, despite it all, yeah, I am. Like, yeah. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to tell jokes, and that's what I'm doing. So, you know, in spite of it all, and then what kind of makes me, it kind of brings you down a little bit, but in spite of it all, I'm doing what I want to do, and I'm for the most part, happy.
Right.
But then you'll see some comic on Facebook say, "This nothing that we're doing means anything because we're all going to fucking die." And it's just like, nothing means shit. And it's like, he's right, but
you know what, though? Look, I was talking to a cab driver last night, and I talked to so many people in my world. But I was talking to him last night, and I said, and I do believe this, is that, like, if you go into comedy or you go into entertainment or whatever, and you have in your head, you know what, I'm going to be Chris Rock, or I'm going to be Jerry Seinfeld, or I'm going to be Louis C.K., or Dave Chappelle. Pick someone who's reached this sort of iconoclastic stature, right?
Usher,
yeah. I'm going to be Riff Raff, you know, like, I'm going to be that dude, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, that's a pretty unattainable, that's an unattainable goal.
Yeah.
Like, let's be realistic. You're not going to be Chris Rock. Like, there's a sidebar. There's these Adult Swim, like, minute clips of Killer Mike and LP.
Okay.
And they're so funny. And Killer Mike talks about, he's just like, you know, you got all these people out here wanting to be Jay-Z. You know there's 10 people around him that are trying to be Jay-Z? You realize that those 10 people are never going to be him? So you really don't have a shot being Jay-Z. Be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Be a mediocre you. That's what you need to be. Just do you, because that's all you got.
And it's funny that, you know, we were talking about Kendrick, and, you know, on that song, I forget the record that he says, if you guys really cared about, like, you're talking about, like, rappers don't rap anymore.
Mm.
If you really cared about it, Killer Mike would be platinum.
Right,
exactly. And I remember, like, one thing, like, because I think doing what we do, and being self-absorbed, you try to make things about you sometimes. But I remember listening to Kendrick Lamar's got this song. I'm sounding like a stan, but he's got a song called "I Want to Be Heard," and the first lines are something along the lines of "When I wanted to be like Jay-Z until I realized that Jay wasn't me," and that's like a moment of clarity that a lot of people have to have in order to really start that path. Because I think when you start anything, you say, I like this person, and I want to be like this guy. And then it's like, oh, but I'm not. And I could, you know, use those people that you admire as a blueprint, but you still got to forge your own path.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's that's a really salient point, because, you know, especially, at least for me, when I got into comedy, I mean, I had my idols, and I, you know, I realized now, within probably the last year, I'm just like, that's not me.
Yeah.
I like that. I like comics, and I appreciate the how they tell jokes and their style and what they do, but that's not who I am.
Right.
I'm me. Like, I gotta go up there and I have to present how I present. Like, I have to tell jokes the way that I tell jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I can appreciate these people, and I think I can be, you know, you can be influenced, but yeah, there's definitely a time when I started where I was just like, I want to be him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, but that's not, he's him.
Yeah.
You gotta be you. Like,
The
fuck you doing, man? So, you know, eventually got to that point for me where I was like, you know, I gotta figure out who I am and what I'm doing. What I was saying before about, you know, when people are like, we're all going to die, and this is stupid, and this is unattainable. This might be a bit naive of me, but if you're trying to reach a Chris Rock stature, it ain't going to happen, right? How many people? There's 4, we'll say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to make a living off of comedy, which should ultimately be your goal, like, I shouldn't tell anybody what their goals are, but for me, the ultimate goal would be to live off of the earnings of stand-up comedy or comedy in general, right? that's not an unattainable goal. Like, I know people who are doing it.
Yeah. Right?
And I know a couple people that are doing it. Yeah. They worked incredibly hard, and they've gotten opportunities that were presented to them that they worked for, but that's not an unattainable thing. You know, like, I don't think that, you know, what we're doing, I don't think, you know, it, I don't want to say that nothing that we're doing matters, because that's a, then what the fuck are you doing
it's for? Kind of a cop-out. It's just, yeah. It's sort of a safety net?
Yes.
The word escapes me. It's like, for fail, if I fail, it doesn't mean anything anyway. So I don't have to try.
Exactly. I won't go out for, you know, I'm not going to send an audition tape to Montreal because
right.
I won't get it anyway, so what's the point of doing
yeah.
that? And it's like, you know, well, yeah, you definitely aren't going to get it. You know, like, if you're not going to submit, of course you won't fucking get it.
Right.
So, you know, it's like that hokey saying of just like, if you think that you can or you think that you can't, you're right. So if you think that you can't do it, yeah, you're right. You can't do it at all because you're not putting in the effort. If you think you can, mm-hmm. yeah, you can do it because you're putting in the effort. And if you don't, let's say you try and you fail, right? You're back where you started anyway. So then why not fucking try? Like,
yeah.
Why not put forth the fucking effort?
It's true.
Because even if you tank, you're still going to be sitting where you were before you tanked.
Yeah.
So, what's the fucking... Go out and, you know, conquer the world. Go steal Dave Chappelle's crown. Go be who you want to be.
Yeah.
I'm going to do an inspirational tape, I think. We're just gonna...
No, it's true. I mean, sometimes... I mean, that it happens on the show sometimes. It happens when I'm by myself or when I'm talking to somebody. It's just... I think it is a matter of letting go of fear. I mean, you can still grapple with your insecurities... like everybody right. else does, but I think in that struggle you find out who you are. I think the journey that I'm on, I'm actually finding out about myself, and I think there's growth, you know.
Yeah. And then people see that, and then I think they gravitate towards you because you're being authentic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like, okay, that's a real person, and that's who they are, and that's, you know, they figure that out. You know,
yeah.
Now, granted, I think it's, you know, I've talked about this too, but it's like, I hate that idea of like, I'm an asshole and I've come to grips with me being an asshole. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, yeah, you're just being a shitty person. Like,
yeah.
That's not a cool cop out of like, I'm comfortable with being mean to people because that's just who I am.
The end thing is now some people are saying, I kind of got a little Asperger's, so
yeah,
I'm a dick. And then that's kind of doing a disservice to
people who have Asperger's and
yeah.
struggle with it, and mm-hmm. you know, because it is, it's, and it's a, you know, and it's such a cop out to be like, you know, I'm mean, but it's not my fault.
Yeah,
it's like, no, you definitely did that. You know, it's almost like if I tell you that I'm going to murder you. It doesn't excuse the fact that I murdered you, right? Like, I don't think I can go to a court of law and have the judge be like, all right, so you're being tried for 3 counts of murder. Listen, Your Honor, I said I was going to do it, so
yeah,
maybe that person should not have been murdered, right?
Right.
Absolutely, not guilty. Like, I don't think that that's how that works, you know?
Talk about your... I don't want you to talk about... majoring in hospitality management.
Yeah.
I had a cousin that did that, and I think he's just working for the government now, but at one point when he was in school, it was like one of your jokes about your kid, private school kid, asking you, where do you summer?
Yeah.
I was gonna say, my cousin summered at a Red Lobster. And he realized that he wasn't cut out for it. But I think he could have made so much cake if he had his franchise. But it's a lot of hard work running, isn't it?
It's your life.
Like, yeah.
When you work in the hospitality game, you can make money. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on what side you're on. But like, for the most part, yeah, you can make some cash. But that's your life. Like, you basically are working when people are playing. Like, mm-hmm. you know... New Year's, Christmas, Thanksgiving,
yeah.
your birthday, your kid's birthday, like, that's your life. And not to say that it's not in any other industry,
right.
but it just wears you out, and it takes such a toll on you that if you don't, and some people love it, they love the hospitality game, and I'm like, you're fucking insane.
Because you look at people like you're doing the road, you look at people running comedy clubs, and the bartenders, the servers, and it's just like, it's another, it's like, I guess maybe from us, like a microcosm of a microcosm, that are joined together. I think maybe it's all the same. I think to a certain degree we're in the service industry too.
We are, but the product that we're giving is something that we have thought of. I think there's a certain love and there's an artistic aspect.
Oh, of course it is. Oh yeah, definitely.
Which differs from being a bar, like you're selling drinks. Mm-hmm. Like you're not thinking up a new Corona.
But some people would say,
well, that's
Brooklyn.
That's, you know what, I take that back, because, you know, there is, and my bartender friends will kill me, but mixologists.
Yes.
Who?
No. Create, oh, so they don't like that?
They don't like mixologists. Okay. I have so many bartender friends, I'm like, I'm a certified mixologist, get the fuck out. Like, don't ever fucking say you are a mixologist.
Is that like saying you're a vegan at a steakhouse?
No. Because, like, if you're a vegan at a steakhouse, that's two polar opposite things. Like, it'd be like saying, I'm trying to think of, it has to be within that.
Or within the thing, I'm stupid. What do you say, like, alright, I know what you're talking about. Continue. Go on with your path, sir.
I shall continue. I shall proceed. But if you're a bartender and you're creating new drinks, you are taking this, like, artistic slant of like, oh, okay, maybe if I take vodka and I mix it with pineapple juice and then I set it on fire, it'll create a new flavor, you know, so mm-hmm. there is that, so I take that back, but I think that...
Redacted.
Yeah. I think, like, I mean, in the hotel game, like, for me, like...
That's what happened, I was too.
In the hotel world. Like, okay. I have more respect, like, I think there's an artistic side to, you know, food and doing that. There is.
Yeah,
like,
oh my
there's
God,
definitely
yeah.
is. You know, Action Bronson has an entire series about the dope food he makes.
I gotta get into
it. Fuck That's Delicious.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this one called Munchies, I think. There was one he had, it was like way before he even blew up, but so I think though, like with a hotel game, you're just selling rooms. Like
mm-hmm.
it really is straight business.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a mathematical equation that it's rooted in such bullshit because, like, I don't know if you've ever been, if you've ever gone to a hotel and they didn't have your room, there's a reason why they don't have your room.
Why?
Because what they do is they oversell the hotel. So, like, let's say, you know, I mean, if you have 120 rooms, you're going to sell 130. And hope to God
somebody cancels.
Like, that's such an insane way of doing your business, because it'd be like if I was at a pizza place and I was selling, I sold 13 pizzas but I only have 10, hoping that 3 people just don't want pizza. Like, that's my hope.
Do you know why all check-in times are at like 3?
The reason for that is that depending on the size of the hotel, mm-hmm. is you have a certain number of housekeepers, and they have to turn over those rooms. Yeah. So, if you have, let's say, you're at 100% occupancy for a night, and it's a huge checkout rush, you know, like, you have a lot of rooms to clean, you have to give yourself that time. So, like, you can't check in at 10 in the morning, or 9, because... shit, people are still sleeping. And, you know, so there is the turnover time that it takes. That's why you have to check in at 3. But, like, and the thing is that, like, in Binghamton, like, I got a hotel room there. And this is, because they didn't think I...
Is your mom still up there?
No. She lives in Jersey with my sister.
Oh, yeah, because you guys, they're, like, Edgewater area?
Edgewater.
I think Ice-T lives near there.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Or he used to.
Okay.
I don't know that they were trying to build a house, because I watch Isos Coco, obviously.
Okay.
They were building a house, I think, deeper into Jersey.
Oh, okay.
But they did live in Edgewater.
Oh, okay.
My mom saw Coco at CBS once, And, of course, in my mom's true Midwestern-y fashion, was like, why is she dressing like that at Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning? Just doesn't make any sense.
Where she was, like, dolled up?
Yeah, she was dolled, of course. I mean,
gotta keep up appearances.
Absolutely. It's funny, this was a while ago, but I went to go pick up my sister at movie theater in Edgewater, and I saw this woman. It was like Sunday at like 2 in the afternoon, and I saw this woman come out of the theater dressed in all white. It was the dead of winter, and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, is she a prostitute? Like, I'm really intrigued. And sure enough, Ice-T walks out right behind her, and I go, and I didn't, like, I just didn't, I don't know why I didn't
put it. Oh, you saw him in person?
Yeah, I saw him.
Was this before or after the call?
This was before, way before the call. Oh,
then you didn't say anything?
I was just...
You were just shocked.
It was Sunday at, like, 2 in the afternoon, and I was like, I didn't think I was going to see
Ice-T. Because they hang out, too.
Yeah, they're like a couple. They're like a regular couple. They go to the movies, they go dancing. Yeah. Like, they do, like, regular couple shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were in the theater together.
And that is kind of jarring, though. You're just, I'm picking up my sister. Oh, my God, my hero.
Well, then you see, but, like, you see this woman come out who I just, I don't know why I didn't recognize her, but I was like, who is this woman dressed in all white who looks, she looks like a prostitute? And then you're, like, staring at her, and then all of a sudden Ice-T walks out, and you're like, oh, blonde chick with amazing body, dressed like that plus Ice equals Coco. Got it. Like, you do the math.
Did that math in your head.
I did the mental math and figured it out that, sure enough, there they were. So the hotel world.
Yeah.
So I went to a hotel and it was, I dropped my bag off early because the rooms weren't ready. It was before 3. And I went back late because I was out getting drunk in Binghamton. Surprise. And then I come back and the guy behind the counter is like punching in shit. And I just knew. I knew they weren't going to have the room. So he punched it in. He's like, well, there's some strange error. Apparently, your reservation isn't here. You didn't, you know, you don't have a reservation here. And I said, so then why is my backpack in your back room? If I don't have a reservation, why did I come here earlier today and they told me that the room wasn't ready if I don't have it? And I go, look, dude, I know what's happening right now. You've oversold this hotel thinking that I wouldn't come back, right?
What did he say?
No, it's just our system's fucking, like, stop lying. Like, I know what you're doing.
Look, motherfucker.
I've been down this fucking road.
Yeah.
So, and now in normal hotel, it's normally hotel custom for them to pay for your room in another hotel or to send you to another room. Because it's called walking. They give you a voucher and all the hotels work together because they all do the same shit. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What, it's like they're in competition with each other, but they...
They're in competition with each other, but they know that they have, like, for example, if I'm the Hyatt and I have 13 people to walk and you're not sold out and I go, hey, look, you know, I've
got these people. Tree.
Yeah, and you're Doubletree. And I go, hey, look, man, I've got these 13 people. I got to send them over to you. I'm going to...
Whoa. We're having a bridal party and a convention here, man. What are we going to do? I can't take those people.
So, if you don't, then when you're sold out and you have 13 people to walk, you come to me and I go, whoa. I've got a bride, like... I mean, if you have the rooms, obviously.
Yeah, I'll then you do it. I was just trying to roam. I'm sorry.
Right, it was our acting. Acting. And
action. Dancing.
But so it is that sort of like scratch your back.
Yeah, yeah, you know what gotcha. I mean?
So there
you're is working the, in tandem with each other.
Yeah, yeah, so it's like you bail me out, I bail you out.
Yeah.
So I told dude, I was like, all right, look, man, I know how this works, right? Now, where's my hotel? You should be putting me up in a room. He goes, that's not, I'm not authorized to do that.
We'll get somebody that can do this.
You better go get someone.
Yeah.
Because now I don't have anywhere to sleep. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
I'm okay with the idea of you walking me because I've been in the business and I know how this works. I think it's stupid, but I know the process behind it. But the fact that I got a room from you Mm-hmm. And now you're like, sorry, go sleep in the street. It's like, no, fuck you. Find me this fucking room. So I start screaming like a lunatic. I'm like, well, I'm just
going to... That doesn't seem like that's in character for you.
At 1:30 in the morning, drunk, and them saying, I don't have anything for you to sleep, that's my hot button. That's when I go, what, are you fucking kidding me? Where the fuck am I
going? Was this recently?
This was probably like 2 years ago.
Okay. And what happened?
So I then just go, well, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to sleep in this lobby. You cool with that? I got to get a room somewhere. So I'm going to sleep on this couch. They're like, you can't do that. I'll call the police. I'm like, and tell them what? You gave my room away and I'm sleeping in your hotel? Is that what you're going to say? So we go back and forth. And then, you know, luckily, you know, I have friends in Binghamton. And I call them up. I'm just like, dude, I need to sleep at your house. Like, I...
That's fucked up, though. They didn't follow protocol, then.
They didn't follow the protocol. Now, again, it's not concrete protocol, but that's what you do. That's what you should do if you ever want this person to stay at your hotel again and not give the Ramada Inn in Binghamton a shitty review about how they did this to you.
Shots fired, Ramada Inn.
Boom, front street. And it is 65 Front Street. They will walk you and not give you a hotel room.
So you put them on Front Street and they're literally on Front Street.
And it all came full circle. You know?
So let's get to, we'll wrap it up, but let's get to you starting. So when did you become disenfranchised with that career path and end up teaching and then teaching and then the comedy? Yeah.
So I became totally disenfranchised with the idea of working in a hotel. The night that a tour bus showed up and they couldn't find a place to park the bus, and that became my fault because on the front desk, you're on the front line. Like, everything that happens in the hotel, you have to deal with, and it's your fault. So... at that point, I was just like, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm not getting fucking yelled at for this bullshit. So,
how old were you?
I was 25.
Okay.
I also lived in Cleveland, and
like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Did you start stand up out there?
I didn't start.
I hear that the city's fucking awesome with the stand up now.
I've heard it's blown up too. So, but this was probably like 8 years ago.
Okay.
And you know. Very short story. Like, if you were a mid-20 something living in downtown Cleveland, there wasn't a lot for you.
LeBron was there by then, right?
Yeah, he was there. I actually saw him at the Spy Bar. This was like, I think it was like his second year playing. And I'll never forget it. I was standing in line. I was actually standing in the VIP line because I knew the bouncer there.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron and three of his friends walked up, and it was just Moses parting the sea. Everyone moved out of his way.
Yeah.
And he just walked right in. Like, that dude was in, is still the mayor of that town.
Yeah. I hope they win, man.
Yeah, I like LeBron. You know, I had a chance to, I talked to him for like 30 seconds.
Oh, what'd you say to him?
I was just like, hey man, I'm a big fan. He's like, oh, thanks a lot. That was it. It wasn't a nice tea conversation. It wasn't
a nice tea.
No, we didn't talk my career ambitions for basketball and how, you know, I'm deep
in. I use you in 2K, man. I fucking love you. You're a fucking beast, man.
Yeah.
To me, though, I don't know. To me, do you play games at all, video games?
I used to. I was a big Grand Theft Auto guy. Huge Grand Theft Auto guy.
Yeah.
But that was really my game. I didn't get into, like, the NBA 2K.
Okay. Yeah, because you're not this... That's right. Okay.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't know.
So you just... And you went to Cleveland right after...
Right after college. I was working... You know, I was working the Hyatt over there. Uh-huh. And then I was just like... not only do I hate my job, but there is nothing for me to do at night because it downtown Cleveland is a lot like Wall Street in New York in that everyone works and then it shuts down at 5 because no one lives around Wall Street. Mm. Like, there isn't like a grocery store. Like, no one lives on it. So that's downtown Cleveland. So I was like, well, I'm out. So I quit that job. I moved back to Binghamton. I was there for 3 months, and I just was a complete maniac. Like, I was drinking all the time, you know, doing all sorts of wild shit.
You were in was this your dark period?
I wouldn't call it a dark period. I call it the fun dark period.
Okay.
Fark period.
The fark
period. Where, like, yeah, I was definitely, I got it out of my system, man.
Fark sounds like an app.
It like a Fark, like pseudo call a Fark. Yeah. You know?
Fark lets you dial your friends in some, I don't
fucking
know.
Iceland.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, like it was me and my boy, I was crashing his house and you know, just hooking up with chicks left and right, like, nice. You know, picking up, going up to community college.
Light skin swagger, man.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was doing Hakeem
fucking
shit.
Asshole.
I was doing Hakeem shit before Hakeem was doing it. All right, don't get it twisted. So that happened. That was for 3 months, and I was just like, yo, man, I can't keep living like this.
Oh, so you had a wake-up call.
So you just
had the wherewithal to be like, I can't
keep...
Yeah.
It was, I was like 26, maybe 27. I was just like, all right, look, there's too much access to just terrible shit in my life right now. And it was readily there. Like, all my friends were really.
Was mom and your sister still
there? They were
there?
In New York, actually.
Okay.
My mom, or my sister, lived in New York.
Older or younger?
She's older.
Okay.
She's 3 years older than me.
Okay.
She lived in New York, and then my mom retired from teaching. And then she moved to New York to live with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of did the reverse retirement and went to retire in New York.
New York meaning?
New York City. Like, yeah, gotcha. City. So it was just me living in Binghamton. And then I was like, well, look, I can't keep doing this. I can't, like, this is going to turn, like, I'm going to get someone pregnant or I'm going to go to jail. Like, that's pretty
wow.
Much, that's where, like, that's where, like, the trajectory was. You know
what kind of shit were you doing?
Well, I was working this, like, dumb... Well, not dumb. Like, I was working in a NASCAR merchandise plant, and I was putting NASCAR merchandise, like the Dale Earnhardt t-shirts and, like, the Jeff Gordon shot glasses in boxes and sent them out to...
So it was like a warehouse job.
Yeah, it was a warehouse job. Okay. In fact, this was right after Katrina, and we were sending NASCAR shit to the Astrodome. Like, people moved to the, you know, because they were relocated.
Yeah.
And they took the FEMA checks and bought NASCAR shit.
Okay.
So, that was a mind fuck.
Wow.
So,
that's weird. I thought, like, you were giving, it almost sounded like you were giving the apparel, the clothing to the victims.
Oh,
but
no.
The people that were getting the checks were, that's
crazy.
They were
buying, they were taking the FEMA checks and were dumping it on Dale Earnhardt shot glasses and shit like that.
So
I was doing that during the
and
day.
And you know that wasn't all black people. We're just alike.
Yeah, we're all
shit.
We just dump our money on different shit, man. So I was doing that, and then I was also just partying all night and, you know, doing some illegal shit that
okay.
I probably shouldn't have done.
We won't talk about that.
I mean, statute of limitations probably passed, but whatever. I don't want to fucking... So...
Sure. All might run for senator one.
Yeah. Well, clearly, when they see my stand-up or any picture of me on Facebook, I'll certainly lose that attempt. So that happened, and then I was like, look, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
Packed up a U-Haul, my friend, Dave Black, rest in peace, came over at 6 in the morning, maybe high on cocaine, and helped me put all the boxes in a U-Haul, and I drove to New York. When I got to New York, I crashed on the floor of my sister's apartment for 3 months.
What part of the city?
I was in Prospect Heights. Okay. I was actually right around the corner from here.
Okay.
I did that, and then I got a job. What was I doing? I was doing sales. I was headhunting. Like, I was a corporate finance headhunter. Then I moved to the Bronx in Parkchester, which... It's off the 6,
okay.
Way deep in the, like, it's up there. So I lived there. My roommate was a lunatic. He wouldn't let me have a key to the mailbox. I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing, but this is weird. And then I went on unemployment, or unenjoyment, as I like to call it, because I got fired from the corporate gig because I realized that corporate America and I do not like each other.
Okay.
So I got fired from that, and then was on unemployment for a while, and then I became a foot messenger. Like, you know the guys that you see on the trains who, like, have the clipboards, and they have, like, the green jackets that are, say, like, express whatever.
Oh, and you're delivering.
Yeah, packages. Like, just, you know, because, like, if there's little shit that you want delivered, you know, you're not going to get a truck to do it.
Yeah.
So just get someone to pick it up and then take it.
Yeah, because so, it's within the city and all
that. Right. So I did that because I worked off the books on that and then got paid unemployment, so I don't think they're going to squeeze me for that, but... So I did that, saw the city, watched a fellow messenger start drinking a 40 at 7 in the morning. That was a highlight for me. I was like, oh my god, this is not for me. And then unemployment ran out, and then I got into education because my sister was teaching, and she got me a job. And then I was like, what, 28, 29? And that kind of turned into a dead-end job. Just because, like, it wasn't, like, I wasn't in the classroom. I was doing, like, the recess supervising. Like, I was the monitor outside.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was a fun job at first just because, like, there was no, there was minimal responsibility. And, you know, I was.
You were playing with the kids.
Yeah.
In an appropriate way.
Correct.
Yes.
It was not a Chris Hansen-esque scenario.
Right.
So that's when I was 28, and I was like, all right, I got to figure out something that I love and I want to do. I've always been funny. I've always wanted to be funny. I'm going to try stand-up comedy. And that's when, and like, I had been like writing funny stories prior to that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was an outlet for humor prior to it. But I was like, well, wait a minute. Nobody fucking reads. Like, I was, like, doing the blog shit before people were blogging.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. No one's really... I'm not getting the turn of writing that I thought I would. You know?
Right,
so
right,
I was just like, all right. I'm going to try stand-up. 28 years old. I go. Try stand-up. I eat my dick for 3 months.
Where'd you go up at?
I went up
the first time.
Very first time I went up at the Abigail Lounge, which is now closed.
Okay.
It's actually right around the corner from here.
Oh, okay.
I did that and did okay. I mean, my whole focus was to just have people listen. It wasn't to like, I knew I wasn't going to kill it. I was just like, all right, I got to just get people to listen to me.
Okay.
So that happened, and then I went back a couple times, and you know, people were laughing. And then
sucks. That's all right. We'll get through it.
So then I did all right. But then I went to the Parkside Lounge.
Yeah.
4 o'clock mic. Tim Warner's.
I know Tim Warner. Stick. I know that place, but I never did the mic there. But I know that place.
Yeah. So Tim Warner's mic, Lorena Bobbitt's dick. I went there. And, of course, I'm, like, maybe a month in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are guys that have been doing it for way longer than me.
Yeah.
And I eat it hard. But I kept going back.
Yeah.
I just kept going back, even though I was just terrible. Like, I was just like, look, I got to keep doing this because this is the only way I'm going to get good. I never did a class. I never went to Gotham. I never went to...
Yeah. I just started to.
I just jumped in. That was it. And then it turned, like, the first time I ever made a group of people laugh was at the Parkside. We were supposed to be in the back room, but there was a nude painting. They were doing nude painting back there.
Oh.
So they moved us to the front, and we were behind a foosball table. And there was English tourists who were watching the show. And I was so nervous, and I went up towards... I'd always go up at the end, obviously, because no one knew who the fuck I was. And Tim called me Dave Chappelle and then introduced me. And I was like, that's not my name. And I went up, and I was wasted, and I just did what I now would be considered crowd work and just yelled at them. Yelled at these English
tourists. Like it wouldn't have been now. Like, it's what I was doing back then was called crowd work.
What some would have considered to be crowd work.
Yeah.
And I remember Mo Diggs came up to me and he's just like, you did crowd work at an open mic? I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Did they laugh?
Yeah, they fucking loved it.
Yeah.
And then that was when I was like, holy shit. It took 3 months of just dead silence, tepid laughter to get to this point where it was a group of people that I'd never seen before, because I started to know the people at the Abigail. These are people I'd never seen before who thought it was funny. And I was like, all right, I'm not looking back. And then just kept doing comedy here.
Yeah, man. That's what I say. It's all about incremental progress. Like, you can see it, too. You can get it. Like, it's like just a couple nights ago, I noticed something. Would I have done that 2 months ago? Would I have done that 6 months ago, last week? And it's just like, oh, no, I probably wouldn't have. But I did.
Do you ever look at, like, your old tapes? Like, the old tapes?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Like, I looked at one. Like, this was at the Parkside. This, like, the quintessential bomb. Like, I watched it, like, 3 months ago just to kind of make myself feel a little better. Because I'm just like, all right, well, I've been doing it 5 years. So this is, let's see how it looked at first. Yeah, I kid you not, Chris. I go up and I grab the mic and I step back from the mic stand and I stand behind the mic stand.
Oh, which is man. Like,
what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
And I'm like rocking back and forth and it sounds like I'm just like memorized. It sounded like I memorized a recipe. Like,
yeah.
So, have you guys ever wondered what would happen if you had to dress like a kindergartner now? Do you ever think about that? And of course people are like,
no, I don't.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
And I probably, what the fuck are you talking about? So like, it was a 4 minute clip.
Yeah.
I got through 30 seconds. I was like, I'm not.
Dude, there's shows like from a year ago. Cause we're both around the same. You started with like a year after me, like, because we're pretty much the same age. I started when I was 29.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people would say that would be late, but whatever. There would be shows that I would kill on that I thought, when I thought I was doing well.
Right.
And I listened to it. Like, for that level, I was, but you listen to it now, you're just like, ugh.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing at that? Like, that's
what
stupid.
The fuck?
But you know what, though? I gotta say, man, I don't think that, you know, 28, 29 is late.
I don't either, because you know yourself.
Know yourself, and you have shit to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, look, in an idyllic world, would I have started at, like, 18? Sure.
Yeah.
But what would I have talked about at 18? I mean, I wouldn't have felt... I mean, I would have just talked about masturbation. I don't know, just dumb shit.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, you know, I don't think 28, 29 is too old of a time to do it, because, you know, there's definitely a better body of life that you have to talk about. Mm-hmm. And there's, I think, kind of a little more a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, yeah, man, if I'm going to hit this, I got to hit it hard, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm going to get in, that's what I said. Like, when I was 28, I was just like, well, I'm almost 30. I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. I'm going to do this. You got to do it now. And you got to go as hard as you can and make it happen. You know, there's definitely, and you know, because you've been to open mics and you've seen, like, mm-hmm. the guy that's, like, 55. And he's like, I'm doing stand-up for the first time. And you're like, oh,
and that's exactly how they sound. I'm doing stand-up for the first time.
Do you guys hate the cops? Well, fuck them. And you're like, why are you yelling at me? I don't understand.
That's true.
Why are you yelling at me? So, you know, again, I don't think that you're late 20s. I mean, look, even my, like, would I have liked to have started at 25? Yeah. I mean, that'd have been, I think that'd have been a good time for me to jump in. And I thought about it, too, but I was too much of a pussy.
I was listening to Al Madrigal on the All Things Comedy podcast, and he was saying, I knew that he started pretty late, quote-unquote late, like 28.
Okay.
And then he's, you know, he's where he is now. So there's hope.
Yeah, and again, look, man, do you want to, like, and that's the other thing, too, is like, I was going to touch on it earlier, is like, do you want to look back at, like, let's say 45 and be like, I never tried it?
Yeah, yeah.
I would.
You'd be so angry.
I would be so pissed if I was like 45, kid, whatever, wife, and now I'm just like, man, I really wish I would have fucking done it. Because you can't turn to your wife and be like, hey, baby, I'm going to quit the job and just tell jokes. She's like, well, I'm going to quit you. How's that? Because that's insane. You can't do that shit. And again, I would that would just burn me to be at that age and be like,
oh yeah, definitely.
Maybe I'll give this a shot. You know,
hey, you guys ever?
You guys, anybody ever ride the subway? Huh? Yeah. There's this guy who used to hang out at this bar I used to hang out at, and like, he's a cool dude, but he's one of those dudes who like, he likes comedy, he thinks it's cool, and he digs it, but he kind of sometimes pushes it a little bit, where he's just like, hey man, I wrote my first 5 minutes, I got my first 5 minute routine, I'm like, I don't want to keep talking. Like, I'm done. He's like, so when do I get to go up? I'm like, you decide that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he really was trying to get onto a show, and I'm like, that's not how this works. Like,
there's levels to this shit.
There's some levels that you've got to get into, and he's totally. It's almost like I think he looked at it like a novelty. You know what I mean? Just like a fun thing that I think I'll just do. You know, like. And that, yeah, it kind of frosted me a little bit, because I was like, dude,
I'm actually fucking know this shit.
You know, I live this shit.
Yeah.
Son, I rode the train, writing jokes on the train, and then I get off and I tell jokes in my head, and then I go to the mic, and then I fall on my ass. You ever do that shit? Huh? Yeah. You know? But, you know, I mean, it's partly like just being woefully ignorant of what the business or what this is, and people don't know that shit. Like, why would they, you know?
And there you go. If you think you know, you probably have no idea.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
And there you go, the diary of Jim Search. Jim, thanks so much, man.
Thank you for having me, man. This was great. You know, I reached out to you because I was just like, you know what, man, I want to be on a podcast. I want to be interviewed on a podcast. I want to just do a different world, and then have the, you know.
Well, I told you I was going to get you on, and when you messaged me, I was like, "Yeah, I'm off Friday. Let's do it."
Mm-hmm. So. And it happened, man. And I'm really glad to be a part of this. And we hit on everything.
Yeah, you know? all of the notes that I had. All I had was Ice T, Binghamton, New York. And then that Hugh Grant movie. So those are all the notes that I had.
Like, if you, my tombstone is just going to say Ice-T, Binghamton, New York, and that Hugh Grant movie. Yeah. Lies Jim Search.
That's it.
That's the thing.
It. So plug your podcast. This will go up Sunday.
This Sunday?
Yeah, this Sunday. If you got shows in the city.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me.
Because I know you like to do your. Is that a six?
It is a six, man.
All right, man. You didn't get no cover for it?
No, I have a cover for it.
Okay, I was about to say, man, you can't.
I can't charge it, like, because the cover doesn't. The cover doesn't let me. Like, if I have the cover on, I can't charge it.
Do they make Mophies for those?
Yeah, or. Is that like an
battery pack?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know.
I use them when I go out, because you charge
the battery
when
pack.
Yeah.
And then you got like basically 200% battery versus 100. I should look into that. I mean, I just have like the OtterBox that protects it from Jesus.
Okay.
So this goes up Sunday. I'm going to be at the guest room.
It's a good show.
Yeah. Ronnie Fleming and Bob Paulos' show. 9:00, April 1st. So I'll be there. And then I got a birthday party on the 4th. So I'm going to go do that.
Are you going to perform?
It's like my nephew's birthday party. Oh, cool. So,
you can't get drunk there.
Well, that's not being the uncle that I want them to see me. Because they should know what they're going to get into eventually when they get older.
Yeah.
And that's my only show, man. I wish I was cooler than that. But of course.
But that's a good show. They can come if they're in the area.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Go check that show out. I totally just backhandedly was like, that's the only thing I got.
Dude, I know how it is.
But. So go see me there. Also, go download the Three of Negroes podcast.
iTunes, Stitcher.
We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. It's me, Ray Sani, Neruda, Care Bear Williams.
Gotta get Neruda on now.
Yeah, get Neruda.
I have to complete the triumvirate.
You've got to complete the trifecta.
I did it with three guys on, so now you guys.
Ah, sweet. So get Neruda on. But guys, go download the Three Negroes podcast. You know, we're great. You'll love us.
Yeah.
You know, also, you can reach out to us at threeanegros@gmail.com. Also, there's a hashtag, three, the number, Anegros, which you can just talk about the crazy shit that we do. So go hit us up there. You can find me on Twitter, @JimSearch. You can go to JimSearchComedy.com to look for my dates, where I'm going to be. You can find me on Facebook, just at JimSearch. Twitter. Well, Twitter's @JimSearch.
Oh, okay.
On Facebook, find me @JimSearch. But if you're reaching out to me, just tell me how the fuck you know me, because I'm not.
Jesus.
No, look.
The random people that.
There's random, like, you know, like, I'll just, like, titties just are friending me now, and, like, pieces of pizza and, you know, like, a paperclip are trying to be my friend, and I'm just like, well, I've never met paperclip.
Sure.
And those titties are nice, but I'm sure there's a tag.
What are those
titties attached to?
Exactly.
So that's what I want to know. So definitely, if you have titties, you should be my friend. But certainly, tell me more about these titties before we become friends.
Gotcha.
And that's my plugs, man. Thanks for having me here, dude. I appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. And, you know, God bless. And stay in school, kids.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.